Welcome to Sports and a Slice of Life. And now, here's your host, Dave Lewis.
How's it going? Thanks for stopping by to check in. It certainly means a lot. Today, we're talking movies with Bay Area filmmaker Mario Bobbano, award-winning filmmaker, fresh off his latest film, My Culture. But first, a word from our sponsor. I didn't become a coffee drinker until the last couple of years. Now I'm into it big time because of the I'm Up Coffee Company. And the difference from what you get in the store off the shelf is the quality. My first experiment was the Sunrise Hike Roast Colombian. Loved it. Now I'm checking out the Ethiopian. My experience is great, and so will yours. In fact, if you go on the website and use the promo code Dave Lewis, you'll get 15% off your first order. The I'm Up Coffee Company. That's imupcoffee.com. Your favorite cup of coffee hasn't been roasted yet. And now, without further ado, here's Mario Bobbano.
Every dog has his day.
Okay, I'm reloaded.
So good. If I'm not mistaken, I think that's Oakland Squad, right? Bay Area filmmaker Mario Bobbano with us today. How's it going, player?
You know, better than some, worse than others. And to correct you, that was actually the song from the female law firm.
Oh, yeah, I stand corrected. That's right.
Malika Yubaka produced that track for me.
That's good stuff. In fact, I know that you got your start way back in the late 80s in music videos.
My first music video was 1989. I Like It Like That by MC Quick out of Oakland. Yep, that's correct. 1989, first one.
Don't forget, there are others I really like too, like The People, and I believe that was by Bam, right?
Yep, Bam. Oh, man, Mike Baby. So many, you know, when I first started. It's another one at the tip of my tongue that we used for the soundtrack for City Life. Oh, say that you'll be with me. Yeah, say that you'll be with me. Yep, that was for the actually that was my first video. That was for the soundtrack for City Life, which was my first film, which I actually shot in 1989. So yeah, that's about right. Yep,
I made that mistake coming right out of the blocks because I was in both those movies, Oakland Squad and Female Law Firm. So
that's correct.
My bad on that. I want to give you some props. You could take a bow if you want to for finishing My Culture. I remember when we talked about this a couple years ago on a podcast, you were struggling with the financing of it, production stopping and starting. So how rewarding is it just to get a project like that done?
You know, when we wrapped up, September of 2018, and you just seen all this hard work that went into trying to make this film have its conclusion. And the hardest part of making a movie is definitely dealing with the cast, the production, the permits, the whole people. So knowing that I wasn't going to have to deal with a lot of people no more was an awesome feeling. And then just wanted to take my time in post-production. But, you know, nothing in life is easy. Things seem to get more challenging. But to complete this particular film, because this particular film was done different than any other film that I have done. So it felt really good just to get that production portion done. Well, this was the first film that I actually went out and you know, got money to do a production, because all previous productions, which I, man, you know, yourself, Malika, the people that was in City Life, Town Biz, Faith Fancher's Story, everybody did it for free. And, you know, my crew, you know, I was always involved in too much besides Town Biz. That was the only movie that I got to co-produce with Ramesses Head, History in the Making. So that made production go easier. But the other ones, you saw me, man, I was pretty much a jack of all trades. And I didn't want to go through that on this particular film. So I wanted to make sure that I could find money so I could pay everybody. So now that this film is done, can't nobody say that I owe them a penny. And because I didn't want people to show up and then, oh, I got to go pick up this, I got to do that. I needed people committed while they were on the set 24/7. So that's the difference between this film and any other film. Everybody was on payroll for the film My Culture.
Was the commitment from all the folks like you'd expect then, since you were, you know, shelling out some coin this time?
No, not really. I still have problems where, unfortunately, and I'm not being negative, where one cast member in particular started demanding more money and then talking about, well, if you don't pay me today, I won't show up tomorrow. So, man, it's kind of crazy because people really don't know me, man. I'm somebody, man, like, don't do this to me, man, because I can get ugly, you know what I mean? But I had to swallow everything and just kind of was submissive to this person, because if I would have did something like I probably normally would have did, then the movie would have been shut down because he wouldn't have been showing up on the set no more. You could best to believe that, because it probably would have came to a physical altercation because of the demands that I felt this person was trying to get out of me. So I had to, man, just really just take a lot of deep breaths and be like, damn, I can't believe this is actually happening. But everybody else was very committed. But that was just kind of sad that you make an agreement with somebody and then all of a sudden, you know, they want more money out of you because they see that they got you. They got you in a real hard place. You know what I mean? So, but
this demanding more money during the shoot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Just very unprofessional, but you know, I'm not tripping. Movie still got done. I don't deal with the person no more. And I'm so happy. I'm happy that I was able to get a distributor for this film, because it took like almost 2 years to get fine distribution, you know? So you think about the ups and the downs and what you had to go through to really put this thing together, you know? And you just got to have intestinal fortitude, which is what I have. And I'm so happy and blessed. I thank the Lord for him giving that to me, for him giving me the strength to never give up, never trip off of what people think about you, what people say about you. Do what you think is right to get the production done. And I'm just so happy that I'm wise enough to come to terms with that.
I want to get past this actor dude, but I was just thinking of an athlete holding out. You know, they want more money, they don't play, but you can find someone else to play running back or do whatever. If you have the lead actor in the movie, you can't substitute and put some other dude in there.
You're right. No, you're 100% right. And that's why I was stuck between a rock and a hard place, you know, because if we could do it all over again, I would have played the lead for sure. I would have changed the writing and the aspect of the age, but I definitely would have played that lead actor in a minute. But, you know, you live and you learn. And the good thing is, moving forward, now we got a casting agency. Moving forward, I don't do movies like I did anymore. Now everything goes to the casting agency. Now everything goes to this production company that I'm working with besides my own production company. So I feel good about that. I just feel good to no longer be that guerrilla filmmaker.
Has my culture opened doors, or were those doors already open?
No, actually, it's all because of my culture, you know, me just continuing to be persistent. And I always thought because of my past history that it would be a lot more easier, but it wasn't. But my culture definitely opened up these doors, and then now people did their research like, oh man, I didn't know you was doing movies since 1989 and in the whole 10. I didn't know you was a youth correctional officer and you financed all your movies, you know. It was so now the door is definitely opened, and I'm just very happy and blessed that you know, I can continue doing what I enjoy doing.
What was the inspiration for My Culture?
You know, just having some setbacks in life in the production film world, you know, major film I tried to do got shut down, and, you know, it kind of was like I fell off, and I knew that I wasn't that person. So I just had this drive in me where it was like, you know, one bad film doesn't define you as a filmmaker. It's all about how you bounce back. And you could best to believe was definitely took a major blow. But that's just me, man. I just don't believe in giving up. I just don't believe in no. I don't believe in something that people think that I can't do. You know, that's just not me. Anybody who personally knows me is like, damn, you know, Mario's the type of person I would love to go into an alley because I know he's not going to run. I know he's going to stay and stand there with me. And that's just my attitude towards whatever I try to put myself in, which is the filmmaking world. You know, I don't let people tell me what I can't do. It's all about what I know, what I can do.
Well, you mentioned you had the setback, and if you just do a little Google searching, people are going to find out what that movie was.
Yeah, I don't even want to
kind of.
Yeah, I don't even want to talk about that. That's all in the past. You know, I don't.
I understand.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah.
But how did you have to rebuild your career, you know, after a stumbling block.
Well,
like
you know,
that. I mean,
your reputation is thrown out the window. So you're known as some as a person that, oh, this person's not going to finish the project. This person doesn't keep his word, you know, and there's really nothing as an individual that you can do about that, unfortunately. You know, the best thing you could do is bounce back and come back stronger and harder, which is what I was able to accomplish with this film, My Culture.
You had to keep knocking on some doors until someone believed again, though, right?
It's not really knocking on doors. It was just being persistent, you know, because I think the doors was already closed, you know, after that particular project. I had to find another way. So I just had to go to plan B, you know, which was to make sure plan A didn't fail. That was my plan B. So, you know, doors closed, but I found other ways to get in. You know, I'm a mastermind when it comes to that. That's one thing I'll give myself credit.
Oakland filmmaker Mario Babineau, filmmaking survivor, with us today. Hey, what about the story of My Culture and where that came about?
You know, it's really intriguing us. You know, like I said earlier, I'm a retired youth probation officer, and I was an institutional youth probation officer, and the majority of the kids inside the institution was Hispanic and Black. And talking to these youngsters, and a lot of these guys was dating the opposite race. The Blacks was dating Hispanics. Hispanics was dating Black girls. They were showing me pictures, and I was like, wow. And this is a new generation. You know what I mean? So the new generation, it's all about what I like about them is, you know, whoever's willing to love you, I'm willing to give love back. It's not back when we grew up where to date outside your race was considered a taboo, you know? And for me, from the majority of my life, to grow up around Hispanics and Blacks, we both have identical cultures come to, you know, we both have identical cultures, you know, we both have a lot in common. And the times that I spent with the families that were Latin, it was just a good time. And then they come to my family functions and it was just fun. So these kids are the ones, or these youths are the ones that put that thought in my mind. So I said, you know, I want to do a relationship like a Romeo and Juliet, but I want to make it Hispanic and Latin and show how much we have in common. And then also show the world now, especially right now, which I love about the film, is date whoever you want to date. It's not about who your parents want you to date. Date who you know got your back and you got their back. That's what life's about right now. And that's what the, you know, the focal point of my movie is about. I totally agree. That's why I'm glad that this film is finally done and it'll be able to be seen by the world so people will be like, wow. Because, you know, a lot of things about this film, too, is a lot of things we think but we really won't say because we're afraid, you know. And that's what I like about this film. So now I'm hoping that it could bring up topic and discussions about people's race, their ethnicities. That's the Asian community, you know, the Russian community, the Jew community. Man, let's just all talk about, man, our struggles. And then, you know, we're a melting pot. Let's come together and let's make this world a better place. You know, that's what life's about, is making this world a better place.
I feel personally more uplifted just talking to you about it.
Well, I'm an uplifting person right now, man. I don't hold grudges. I may not work with you no more, but I don't have time to hold a grudge. Man, that's that negative energy. But please don't think that I forgot that we had a horrible working relationship.
I love the way you just did that too. Be like, I don't hold grudges, but I'm done with you.
You know, it's kind of,
that's a good way to do it.
No, but it's like, if a person has a vision and you don't want to be detoured from your vision. So if a person is going to assist you in your vision, fine. But if a person is going to try to sabotage your vision, what's the use of us working together? Oh, because now I got some ducats in my pocket, or I'm a known person now. Now it's cool. No, man, man, I kind of needed you when I really believed in you, you know? Don't wait for something successful to happen to believe in me, because I'm going to keep it 100. You could ask anybody who has known me. I've always been a straightforward, real, down-to-earth dude. I was never the person that would, I'm talking behind your back, I would tell you to your face, and that's the problem that I have with a lot of people. But I've always been a real dude, you know, raised by a beautiful mother and father, and, you know, my siblings. I was always a good dude, man.
I'm looking at what you accomplished with this movie already, Universe Multicultural Film Festival. Tell me about that. And obviously you won a couple of awards with Best Cinematography and the Best Actress in Elena Ester.
Oh man, she's dope. I'm looking forward to working with her in the future. Dope. Well, pretty much the festival Universe, My Culture, has been in existence for 17 years. And it's for filmmakers such as myself, where they look for films that are really diverse, but they want to compete with people throughout the whole world. So they only accepted certain films, and man, May 28th, 29th, 30th, it was supposed to go down, you know. I mean, I didn't know what the outcome was going to be, but I felt confident about my film just because of the message, the way we shot it. And, you know, besides Elena, man, the supporting cast was off the chain. I'm people's going to go off. Man, it's like her auntie, her mother, her brother Nacho, my main character's sister, oh man, the mother of the black family, oh man, the thugs. They all should have won awards, I thought. And when people see the movie, they're going to see that. But to receive these awards from that particular festival, because if you go on to look at their website, it's very prestigious, you know, red carpet and everything. And it was just like, wow. Man, it was surreal just because of the fact that I know how much energy that I put into it. A lot of the cast members put into it. The production team put into it, you know, which I had a very small production team. There's maybe about 12 of us. The principal cast was 16. But everybody just besides, you know, that one individual, man, gave it their all, and it shows. So to receive those awards from that festival, it made me feel good. And for Elena, and like I said, cinema photography, which, you know, all the shots, you know, before we shot it, I got together with my camera person, and I told him these are the exact shots I want. The drones, all the establishing shots was done from Jake Eisner, which is Ed Eisner from Mary Tyler Moore, his grandson. That dude can really do some drone shots. So I attest a lot of the establishing shots on Jake, because that dude, when people see the film, they're going to be like, man, them drone shots was off the... And me and Jake spent all day just driving all around Oakland getting these beautiful drone shots. So, you know, and that goes to the cinema photography. And then Foster Corridor, who did my lighting, he was involved in a lot of my shots as well, like the slow-mo shots and whatnot have you. So the whole director of photography thing was a collaboration of myself, my cameraman, my drone guy, and my lighting department. You know, wow. You know, and then, you know, I wanted a certain lens. I wanted a certain look. I wanted to use Cook lenses. That gives you a certain look. So, yeah, I had a plan. But it felt good just to receive those awards, those accolades, you know, because the other films that was in this festival I thought were pretty good.
You know, you mentioned the cinematography, and you can just go on to YouTube and look up My Culture and see the trailer, and you get a great feel for how beautiful it looks just in that little, you know, 90-second snippet.
Yes, and you're so right. It's 90 seconds. And like I said, we just collaborated. Me and my lighting guy, him and his assistant, Key Grip, they stayed with me. You know, I got a 3-bedroom, so I let them stay with me. So we would sit up, and we were just talking about what type of shots I want, because lighting is so important. I said, this is the type of shot I want, you know. And, man, and it worked out, man. And I'm really – the lighting was off the chain. Man, Foster Cordy, you did a good job. Lighting was couldn't ask for better lighting, you know.
Mario, is it easier for filmmakers now because of the technology? You don't need film like the old days. There's more, you know, computer software, and, you know, now we have stuff like drones.
Oh, most definitely. Because back in the, you know, when I started late 80s to the 90s, you had to use film, and then, film was a whole nother ball game arena, because you would shoot something and then you would have to take it to get it developed. And you didn't know if you was out of focus or your rack focus was working. You know what I mean? And keep in mind, a lot of the films I did, like City Life, when we first hooked up, was me just getting the camera from my mentor, Bill Moore, the head cinema photographer at Channel 2. He had a film camera, a news film camera. So I'm just gambling on how to use this film camera. You know what I mean? And other projects that we've done with that camera. And, it's definitely a different ball game. It's a lot more easier now to make films, most definitely, because you got the playback right there. You could, once you film something, you could see exactly what you shot and how it looked, opposed to you would have to take it and get it developed. And for me, I didn't have the type of film company where I had that development on my actual set. So I had to take it over to Monaco's in San Francisco, you know, Monday, and then I'll be able to look at my, you know, my dailies like 2 days later. So, wow, yeah, way different. And, you know, Adolph Gas used to get all my equipment from over there. Oh, man. It was beautiful times, though. Beautiful times. But times now, I think, are definitely a lot more easy. You can shoot a film on your phone, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So definitely more easier. And you can be more creative now. Because, like, to do aerial shots back then, you had to go up in a helicopter. And then you had to make sure that the person who was operating the camera at that time knew what the hell they was doing as far as getting that focus. Because you could still be up so high in the air, and your shots could still come out of focus. So, yeah, definitely easier.
I was thinking of the old days, Mario, because I was on the set with you, and this is back in the film days.
1995.
And it was the end of the day. I think it was in some movie theater or something.
Yeah, it was Grand Lake. Grand Lake Theater. Alan Michon, a good friend of mine.
Well, this is shooting it though, Mario, and this is the end of the shooting day, and you're running out of film.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, hey, man, you got one take. If it ain't good, it ain't going. and I don't remember if it was good or not, but it was a one-shot deal because we're running out of film.
Yeah. Back then, I had to do a little math thing with the film. I only had so many feet of film, so it may have equivalent to each scene that we filmed, because we film it on a weekly basis, every weekend we'd be hooked together. So I would buy a certain amount of film. So it may have been 3 hours of film. You know, we're doing like 10 scenes, you know? So as we would shoot, I would do my little math. Okay, we only got so much left. And I think when we filmed with you that particular scene, I was down to the butt of the film. Like, I had about maybe 5 minutes left. So I had to make the best of that 5 minutes. I had to try to find the best angle to do that particular shot and pray like hell, which I knew you was going to do it anyway. Put a little bit of pressure on you to make sure that you nailed it. And you did. But I hope I didn't put too much pressure. But like I said, it made it in the film.
No, pressure is what makes diamonds, right?
You know, it does. And I remember I was having a conversation with my brother like last week, and we were talking about as an actor. It's like, man, you know, when I get to the third take, I get more into it. And I'm like, man, forget that. I need you to be awesome on the first take. The other two takes is just a give me, you know? So when it comes to filming, you know, to me as a director, I get juiced. I get juiced as soon as I get on the set. You know, I'm like a big kid, you know? So if I was an actor and I minored in drama. So I always have these awesome one takes because I'm looking forward to doing this scene. Like you guys will see in this film right here, I'm playing the agent, which I wasn't supposed to. I threw me in at the last minute because of circumstances beyond my control. And I play a sports agent. Everything I did was one take. And people was like, what the hell? And I'm like, man, if I wrote the movie and I minored in drama, I should be able to portray the character that I just, even though that there wasn't no lines for that, I just kind of came up with it. Me and the actor just went off of each other. But I was juiced, man. The day before I said I'm finna be in this movie because, like I said, circumstances beyond my control. So I had to force myself in it. And I was juiced.
Do you want to act at all anymore?
No, nah, it's not about acting. It's just I try to put myself in a position where if there's nobody that will do it, then I have to do it if it's my movie. Or if I can't find the right person to do it, then I'll play that role because since I wrote it, I could pretty much act any character that's needed to be. So based on my films, if I can't find nobody, then I'll do it. Now, if I'm in somebody else's films, I have stipulations. Certain things or scenes I'm not going to do. So, you know what I mean? So it depends. But yeah, if somebody wanted me to play a role that I wasn't comfortable with, and I'm like, man, I don't care how much money you would pay me. It's like, man, I'm cool. I'm passed.
Yeah, since the technology is so much better now and you had to really hustle back in the day, is there one of those earlier films that you're most proud of because you had to go through so much adversity with dealing with film, dealing with bad actors, dealing with shooting at 3 a.m, everything else that, you know what, with all we had to go through, this was pretty damn good.
You know, be honest with you, every film I've done from City Life to Characters to Consequences to Cahoots, Female Law Firm, Oakland SWAT, every film that we have done, I always was happy about doing the particular film. You know, I always got this certain high. Faith Fancher's story, the music videos, everything I've ever done, I always get juiced, even the film that didn't come out, you know. I've always been fired up for films. When I'm involved, when I get to get on the set and then I see people showing up in there, I get like, oh, man, it's like I'm playing football again, you know. So every actor that I have ever worked with, from the Oakland High students at Oakland High in 1989 to you guys, Primo, AJ, I've enjoyed all you guys. Mia Perez, every movie I did, Jayski Love, everybody that I've ever, that was on my set, if they would make me remember, if they could say I was in your movie and I did this scene, I I loved it.
Well, you brought back some great memories there with some old school names from the mid-90s.
Hey, man, I remember all my cast people, man, because they were doing me a favor. You guys was acting for free. And, you know, I appreciate you guys more now because back then I didn't realize that, you know, people get paid for this. You know what I mean? And you guys are showing up volunteering. So especially them kids at Oakland High in 1989, I'm like, Ski Adams, you know, Quincy Smith, you know, Julius Tank. You know, I remember you guys, you know, them guys, man, would show up and they would be happy. And wow, that's just, I'm like, I love all you guys, man, for helping me out, because I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for you guys showing up, being in these movies that I was writing and producing and directing. You know, Jocelyn Hudson Brown was my right-hand person back then, did all my paperwork, and my crew, Rhonda Woods and Jerry Hodges, that was my core, Chris Broughton, and then now Shirley Sharp, she runs my business, you know. So it seems like I advance with all the people that I surround myself with. And like I said, you know, you still got to be able to run a company and run a business aspect. You don't, like Jocelyn Hudson Brown and Shirley Sharp, I own all my material thanks to them ladies right there. And you don't like the, and release forms were signed. So if I wanted to go back and release City Life, well, not City Life, because I didn't use the right music, but any other movie, I own the rights to them. And I'm looking forward to re-releasing all those films. And it was thanks to them women that ran my business. Jocelyn Hudson Brown and Shirley Sharp.
Always good at sharing the love there, Bobino.
Man. Definitely good. But, you know, like I said, I'm happy moving forward in my life with this production company. And you know, the good thing about what's going on in my life is, since I'm almost 60 now, is the knowledge that I have absorbed, the way that I can work with people now, the way type of shots I want. You know what I mean? So I got a lawyer now, entertainment lawyer, you know, Julius Terrell. It's like, you know, I got a manager now, you know. It's like things I don't have to worry about no more. That's their job, you know. And Shirley running the company, you know what I mean? Man, life is good, man. Life is good.
I didn't realize I was talking to a baller like that.
No, I'm not no baller. I'm just somebody who believes in themselves. And one thing I want to say real quick, is, you know, we got this pandemic going on. And one thing I would encourage people to do that I think has also helped me to where I'm at today is you got to stay healthy. You got to take care of yourself, you know. Because of me being in good shape, it's always made me not trip off the negative. It's like a therapy. If things are going wrong in your life, rather, if things don't go the way that you had possibly wanted them to go, don't trip. If you work out, your mind's always, mind, like you work out a lot, your mind always coming up with these creative ideals, man, and you're not, it takes the hate out of you, you know? So, you know, the kids, man, in school, elementary, I wish I could get together with them and just take them through workouts for about an hour. Your immune system is amazing. If your immune system is strong, you could think better. So please, people, try to get out and exercise. It's where I'm at today is because I like to exercise a lot.
There's a massive mind-body connection.
Yes, but it's fun. To me, it's like getting high. You know, the people could really understand my passion for working out. Working out to me is like smoking a joint. You know, I can't really say cocaine. I don't really know what that feels like, or the pipe or whatever. It just makes me feel so damn good. You know what I mean? It's like I wouldn't replace that for nothing in the world besides being with a beautiful woman. You know, them are the two things that make me feel the best.
Mario, what was your inspiration to get into filmmaking in the first place?
You know, when I was playing football at Sac State, you had to declare a major. And my major was media productions. So I took a class, you know, I was taking class with communication, speech, and drama. You know, I want to see, you know, so just by me doing that, just, I'm not going to say taking it as a joke, but you have to declare a major when you become a junior. So when I was taking these classes, I'm like, oh, man, this stuff is pretty funny. And then me also watching movies growing up, you know, movies like The Warriors, you know, all them black exploitation movies, you know, the Bruce Lee movies, you know. So I kind of already had a history of it because I would watch all those movies. But once I started taking those communication classes, media productions, and a little bit of touch upon film, I was like, wow, this stuff is intriguing. And then, you know, I got an internship thanks to Fred Zender at Channel 2. And then I met my mentor, Bill Moore, who taught me about cinema photography. And then as far as being in front of the camera and speech, Faye Fancher, the fabulous Faye Fancher, who was like a big sister to me in this business. And she told me how to be articulate and how to look in front of a camera when you're reporting. You know, man, so... Yeah, so back in college, man, it just all kind of just fell into my lap, and I said, you know, I can make a living doing this. But then obviously in the media world, it's kind of hard. So then I ended up getting a job at Juvenile Hall, and I liked the money and the benefits and the retirement package they had. So I'm like, okay, I need something to fall back on. So, but filmmaking has always been my passion and dream, but it's so hard to get money. And like, remember, film costs money back then. So, yes, man, I just was persistent, but I just fell in love with it, D. Just fell in love.
There's certainly kind of an inner city feel to your films and your portrayal of Oakland. And you try to show the positive of the city and not just the grit, but you had that balance of, hey, here's the real life. but there's also some good there too.
You know, it's intriguing and interesting that you say that, because I grew up in a different part of Oakland, and people, these kids laugh at me. I say I'm from Central Oakland, you know, so, but I come from a large family where I have a lot of my family lived in deep East Oakland, you know, so I spent a lot of time with them. I went first through sixth grade. I went to elementary school, you know, I mean, a Catholic school, St. Elizabeth. And then I went to McChesney Junior High, which is now Edna Brewer than Oakland High. So, but I always grew up in the Glenview area, which is on the other side of MacArthur. So just the way I grew up, I felt so fortunate to grow up in a house. And you know, I think I was kind of lower middle class, you know, but so my portrayal of Oakland is much different than a lot of people, because I wasn't in the hood in East Oakland. I didn't really know what it was like. We're in the Murder Dubs at the Bottoms, you know, but my cousins went through that. So I was living vicariously through them, you know. You remember Felipe, he was a top gangster, you know, Felipe Bob, and so rest in peace. He was my bodyguard, you know, back when we was doing Consequences. But, you know, so that thug lifestyle I had through him, you know, in Juvenile Hall, Young, and San Quentin. So, and then, you know, here I'm like this proper preppy guy. Not, I was never a preppy, but, you know, just like an athlete or whatever it may have been. So my stories are always going to come from the perspective of somebody who grew up in Oakland, but wasn't a part of that street life, but knew about the street life. You know, sometimes I may go hang out with my dudes about that street life, but I always left at the right time. So all my movies is always going to reflect off of my type of experiences, the people that just were athletes that went to school that were pretty much educated, you know. So, you know, that real hard street stuff, I know it, but that's not me and Town Biz, you know. I collaborated with Damon and Ram. They knew about that life. They grew up that life, you know, but my cousin grew up that life, so I was able to easily play in that movie, you know. But me, from where I grew up, which I say Central Oakland, my movies are always going to have that Central Oakland type of effect / feel.
Did you learn anything from your time with youth probation, you know, some of those kids that you can maybe think about with lifestyle attitude to bring into your films?
Come on now, man. A lot of thug parts that I have in my, or street stuff that I have in my films, come from these youths, because I got really close with a lot of my kids. A lot of them kids to this day I consider like my own personal seeds, you know, because a lot of these guys didn't grow up with fathers and they used to look up to me because of the way I talk, the way I look, you know, my physical fitness type of attitude that I have with them. So yes, we had some heartfelt conversations and they told me why they do the things that they do. And you look at their lifestyles, I'm just like, wow. You know what I mean? But I always tell them there's a better way. And not to go really weird with this conversation, but I was telling them, if you're going to go out there and be a part of that lifestyle, take some of that money, invest it in stocks. You got to know how to hide your money. You know, if you're going to do it, at least try to invest in some type of property or something. So these guys was like, damn, they called me Dub. Man, that's pretty smart. I said, well, if you're going to do that, flip that, then stop that, then do this. And so, you know, because they was telling me what they were doing or how they get guns. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, so we had some really profound, deep conversations, and a lot of them dudes now, which are probably 40 years old to 20-something, not 40, I think they're the oldest I got now from be working at Juvenile Hall, maybe be about 35. But when I see them, it's just the love that they give me for, like, telling me, man, thank you for being that father figure in my life and keeping it 100 with me. Because some guys would come back, and I would rip a hole off in their anus about it. Like, dude, you can effing up, you know what I mean? But I said, I can't help it, man, just my environment, you know? So a lot of my stories do come from the youth that I have encountered in my life, and I'm still close and in contact with a lot of them today. They'll reach me on Facebook or Instagram, and, you know, I show them love.
Any favorite story, Mario, that comes out with a guy that, you know, was a knucklehead that turned his life around?
Wow, so many. I would say mostly from somebody who was in a situation where they were a big-time, like, gang member. And because of me talking with them, they're now an advocate for not being in gangs, for being your own person, trying to educate the younger people on why it's not good to be in a gang, and then having a family now, you know. And actually, it was a Hispanic kid, you know, even though my brothers, I got a lot of good stories with my brothers, but it was actually a serious Sereno, you know, that was, man, I'm like, this dude, when he came into Juvenile Hall, I think he was 13, and he was like, I'm full blown. I'm like, damn, I mean, he hated anything that was the opposite of that was a Norteño, you know what I mean? And I'm just like, wow. So for me to talk with this guy, for me to be not his same ethnicity, and for him to have a strong liking to me, And then for him to get out, get his life together, you know, move up out of Richmond and, you know, move to Modesto. And man, that makes me feel something good, because this dude really didn't even speak that good English, but we became really close. And you know, like I said, I'm close with a lot of young black men as well. But for me to change somebody else's culture, for them to look at me as a father figure and stuff, which was really hard. He's like, man, I want you to get with my mother. I'm like, what the hell? You know, which to me was very flattering. He wanted me to be like his real father, you know, because his mother wasn't, I guess, with the right people. But that made me feel really good that this young man looked at me to that much when he's like 16. Hey, man, I want to introduce you to my mother. And he tried to actually hook me up, but I'm like, I can't do that, man. I'll get fired from my job. But that made me feel really good.
Is there some advantage, Mario, in coming from Oakland to really portray things authentically rather than, you know, coming from USC film school and you have all these advantages and maybe you make a beautiful project, but it doesn't have that truth to it?
I'll put it to you like this. I think anybody born and raised in Oakland got a little bit of thug, even the mayor, Libby Schaff. Just growing up in Oakland, it's just something about it where people try to take advantage of you. Like I said, I went from St. Elizabeth to McChesney, and then people there was, you know, like, I remember people back in the day when VCRs was hot, people in Oakland were selling bricks in them boxes. They would cover them up. So you got to have some hustle in you, you know, come out of Oakland. So anybody who gets the chance to come out of Oakland, and just the things that we go through in the classrooms, you know, just the way we try to get over on people and think we're slick, you know what I mean? So when you get a chance to, if you do come from Oakland, go to U, that's why I think Ryan Coogler is so good. You know, his father, Ira Coogler, and my brother were really close. I remember he's 2 years older than me. So everybody from Oakland got a little bit of thug in them, a little bit of hustle in them. And whenever you get the chance to go to any type of institution, you take that Oakland with you. And that's why I think Ryan Coogler is probably one of the most dominant directors in the world, because he's from Oakland, you know. And look at the athletes, the Bip Roberts, you know, who I know personally, Lorenzo Lynch, who I played football with. People from Oakland, whatever they do, they hammer, you know, they go all out.
Mario, I'm reading this book I think you'd like from Charlemagne the God. He's got this book called Black Privilege. And he refers to Rakim and his song In the Ghetto, some great lyrics that I think are really appropriate for you, is, I come correct, I won't look back, because it ain't where you're from, it's where you're at.
No doubt. What's the name of the book? I got to get this one.
Charlemagne the God. It's called Black Privilege.
Black Privilege.
And he's a famous DJ on the East Coast, and he's done great for himself. But some great life lessons in there from folks that come from the hood or close to the hood or maybe from some place that – you think maybe you couldn't make it, but you use that to your advantage.
You know, please text it to me so I could make sure that I, you know, I know it's Black Privilege, but I'll make sure I get the Arthur right. And one thing I'll say about knowledge, and this is what I should tell the guys in juvenile hall that were incarcerated, try to read a book that's going to educate you. Try to learn words. Try to learn what these words mean. Try to learn about, like, you know, even in a dope game, you know, how many ounces make an ounce? I mean, you know, grams make an ounce. You know, you need to know this type of stuff. You need to know math. You know, you need to know if you want to, if you have a house and you want to do stuff to your house, you know the math behind it, you know, so therefore when you hire somebody to do it, you can kind of watch over them and see what they're doing and then do it yourself. So reading, absorbing information, knowledge is so powerful. And that's what I always used to tell my youngsters, is it's good to have that street terminology, but you also want to understand what words mean and books mean. So we're just like when somebody sends you a contract or whatever, before you get it to your lawyer, you're going to kind of know what the basis of this is. So whenever it comes to absorbing any type of information, knowledge, get it. My kids still laughing because I like to read the newspaper. They say, why do you still read that old newspaper? You can watch it on the internet. I said, because I know if I'm looking at this newspaper, I know I'm going to, you know, come across some cool words. And I like writers, you know what I mean?
It's totally different with the newspaper in your hand where you can touch it and feel it and thumb through it.
Yeah.
On the online experience, it's just not the same.
You know, and it's like, it just, to me, it captivates me when I'm reading the newspaper, you know what I mean? And then I see a word, I'll stop, what's that word mean? And then I'll go look it up on my phone real quick, and then I'll use a new word, you know? So knowledge, people really don't understand, is key, man. You can read up, like if you read up on health, you read up on immune system, you could, like this COVID thing, you could kind of read up on things that'll keep you to survive, you know what I mean? If you do stocks, I mean, now's a good time to do stocks, you know what I'm saying? Man, it's just beautiful, man. It's just beautiful to absorb knowledge. And that's something that I'm a strong believer in, is the more you educate yourself, the less you'll have to depend on somebody to answer certain questions that you can answer yourself.
Hey, just one thing, Mario, from a societal standpoint, since I don't get too much into politics, but there's this whole issue of systemic racism. Mm-hmm. And you worked with youth probation. Mm-hmm. You've been in the inner city. Can you address like how that exists and what makes it such a challenge to overcome that?
Well, you know, what's kind of weird is because of my age, you know, the stuff that's going on now was stuff that I was used to growing up as a kid, being pulled over by the police. And I was just being a black man and not really having the same playing field as the next person. I even knew this when I was at college. You know what I mean? It's just the way we were raised. So right now I'm very happy with, I see these youngsters protesting for, you know, equal rights and so on and so forth. And my whole thing now is I'm just glad now the whole world knows kind of what as a black man was really going through back in this, growing up in the 70s and 80s, you know, and for us to having to be strong. Me being in a position where around people when I was in college, they'll make certain jokes, but I'm the only black around, so I can't really defend myself, because if I try to defend myself, I may be hung somewhere, you know, because I was outnumbered, you know what I mean? So what's going on now, I'm glad. And, you know, like I said, growing up during my time and to where I'm at today just made me a much stronger person, you know? So I'm just happy that everything is now to the forefront. And you know, one thing I want people to know, you know, with this, with what's going on with the racism and systematic and things of that nature, I have grown up in Oakland around some excellent, you know, European people. So I'm not somebody who bashes on somebody because of their race, you know, because growing up in Oakland was a melting pot. You know, we had Indian culture, the Jewish culture, and I was cool with everybody. So, you know, even though I know there's still bad apples out there, but you have to look at what people are really, what they're worth, their heart. You know what I mean? But you had a lot of people, because I grew up in Oakland, but the people who was probably from Orinda or Moraga or whatever, they probably grew up kind of prejudiced. You know what I'm saying? It's because they didn't know any better. You know what I mean? So I'm glad everything is to the forefront now. So now at least every minority has a chance. And that's all we ask for in life, is to have a chance.
What's next for you, Mario, as a filmmaker?
Well, me and I got back together with Damon Hart, the person of the Town Biz movie, and we're writing a movie called Vilified, which is an Oakland movie about a black man raising his two boys in Oakland, which is pretty much a true story. I'm kind of writing a movie about my younger brother, which he did, which I commend him for. But we just wrapped up a documentary, Zoe, the Real Coach Carter. And I'm so happy that this fell into my lap, because I seen Alonzo grow from where he's at to, you know, as a coach, track coach, football coach, McClimmon's High, changing that whole program around. Man, that's an incredible dude, going to a Berkeley High, changing that culture around, winning championships, then going to CC. Now he's at San Jose State University. He's the running back coach, and he just won Mountain West Recruiter of the Year, which means he was the best recruiter. So San Jose State got some positive things going on. And for me to do this man's story, you know, we're pretty much wrapped that up as well. So we're going to enter that into these major film festivals. So I feel I've been lucky. This, even though this has been a horrible year, it's also, I've been blessed. You know, I've been blessed. So Zoe, the Real Coach Carter documentary. Oh, man, this man is so powerful for what he's done for the youth. For any man that wants to take the time out to coach football, and then make sure that he tries to get his kids that was committed to him and get them an athletic scholarship. And his main goal was Operation Education, which means I'm going to put you in a position to go get this free education for free. Make sure, because you may not make it to the pros, which you all want to, but if not, at least you got that free education, your degree you could fall back on, which I was fortunate enough to get assistance and aid to get my, because I played football. So got my degree. So that's one thing I kind of look back on. I don't really know what's, I mean, I had a few student loans, but it's not like the major bills that a lot of these other people have. So for Zoe to do that for a lot of them kids, it's like, man, this man's story needs to be told. Plus he's a good dude. Real good dude.
When's that movie coming out somewhere?
Well, we just finished it. So, you know, once you finish stuff, you know, it takes time. Now you got to send it to these festivals. And then, you know, my latest distributor may be interested in it. But since I did a movie about Zoe, everything that I'm doing, I'm collaborating with him. I'm not just going to make a decision for Debonair Productions. I'm going to collaborate with him first, because he allowed me to do the story of his life. So I just can't be the Mario of Debonair Productions and I make all the decisions on the movie. So I'm collaborating with him to see what he wants to do with it.
What about the release of My Culture?
Well, I just picked up signed the papers last week for my distribution deal. So now it's up to the distributor. They're getting together all the necessary paperwork that they need, which they have for me. They have the movie. They have all my artwork. They have everything. So now it's like an aggregator, which means now the aggregator, they got to put together the package to sell me in the movie. So that's what they're doing right now. They have all my information. They had a sense of, I believe, Thursday. And they're putting it together. So now I just got to be patient. My job is done. I'm just glad that somebody liked it and wanted to pick it up. Because I, trust me, I didn't, real quick story. And I would tell you a story. Well, no, I didn't. When my movie was done and I wrapped up the editing, I thought I could just go to Netflix and put on a suit. And I did it. I put on a suit, drove out to Campbell, California, you know, went to the Netflix office, had on my suit, and the receptionist just said, good morning. I just walked right past her like I was supposed to be there. And then I got to the elevator, but I'm like, okay, I got this far. Now I got to talk to somebody. So I kind of asked some woman, hey, excuse me, who do you talk to about getting a film distributed? I just made a movie. She said, oh, okay. Let me get back to you, sir. She goes in the elevator because I don't know what floor to go to. And then security comes down and escorted me out of there. But that's how much confidence I had on a suit, man. And it was, you know, so when I was driving back, I'm like, I felt good because at least I tried. And at least I had confidence in myself to think if I would have been able to get past that door, if somebody would have saw my movie, it would have got picked up. But they definitely escorted my ass up out of Netflix. I'll never forget that. And I got up like at 5:30 in the morning. I didn't want to miss traffic, man. Got up, you know, cooked me some breakfast, you know, put on my suit, you know what I'm saying? And then drove out there, got a block away. Then I put my hard shoes on, tied the tie up, you know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah, that was funny.
Did someone give you some advice like that was a great idea?
You know, it's really weird. A good friend, well, not a good associate of mine at Juvenile Hall, they were telling me, man, your movie, because I was showing people at Juvenile Hall, like my clips and whatnot, have you in scenes of the movie. So they was like, man, you just need to go to Netflix, man, put on a suit. So I said, you know, I didn't care. So I did it. It was a woman and a guy suggested that I should go to Netflix and just walk over there and be like, hey, excuse me, you know, I'm a hardworking individual. And I did it. So, yeah, sometimes when it comes to me, all it takes is one or two people to kind of put it in my head and I'll do it if it's not suicidal. I don't do suicidal things, but there was no harm in me going to Netflix. They was like, dude, it's only an hour away, dude. What do you got to lose? And it made sense to me at that time. You know, at least I know I had the cojones to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And for all the other stuff that you've done, Mario, people can go and stream that, right?
Yeah, you know, the old Debonair Productions. A lot of my work's going to pop up. A lot of my stuff is on YouTube. I was streaming my movies, all my movies, but they were up for 3 months and I only made $13 and I spent like a nice investment. I'm like, oh, forget this. This ain't working. So you can no longer stream my movies. Now I'll be working with my distributor on, you know, remastering all my old films, which I remastered and getting them out eventually. But yeah, but there's still other work of mine and all my trailers is on my YouTube page, my website, Debonair Productions. And you could also go to my IMBD page and you could see that information as well. All the movies that I've done and all the trailers that I've done for the movies that I've done in the past.
It's been fun watching your career blow up, Mario. It's awesome.
Well, it's nowhere near over. And I'm just happy that I'm healthy and my mind is so sharp to really do what I want to do now. So, man. Sky's the limit, man. We're going to get you back on the set, too, because you've always been a fun character to work with as well. You bring your A-game, which I like, man. And one thing I like about you, which is very heartfelt, is you never want to let the director know. You really take the time out. Now, what do you want? What do you want his emotions to be? How do you want his pitch to be? What do you want his look to be? And, man, I love that from you, man. So you're good people, man. I'm glad to have you on my team, man.
I appreciate the nice words and look forward to working with you again.
All good, my brother. All good. Well, you know, it's about talk myself out, about to get back into my working out because I'm feeling good like I'm supposed to. But you got the first exclusive interview for me winning that award. So I wanted you to do it first because we family.
I'm honored, Bobino.
And last but not least, just like at the beginning of this interview, I was talking about a particular individual. Like I said, no harm lost, but I got to let people know the real. You know what I'm saying? People got to know the real deal of what I went through. And I just wanted to get that out there. But it's like I said, I'm not being negative. I was just keeping it 100.
I just want to be authentic with our audience to ask you about that stuff. And overcoming adversity is part of your life story. It's the truth.
You're right. You're right, my brother.
Okay. So what are you benching and deadlifting these days?
Well, I ain't been to the gym in a while. So I was benching 315. I don't do the deadlift, but one thing I'm happy about is I have been accumulating my weights at home. So now I just got me a squat rack. I just got me a bench today. I'm going to go in my garage and assemble it. So, man, I'm juiced that I got my little own home gym now. So, man, life is good. Life is good.
Go get your swole on. I'll talk to you later.
Real talk, my brother. Okay, one love, D'Anthony.
Thanks to Oakland filmmaker Mario Bobino. You can check out his work on Debonair Productions. Our executive producer is Hunter Lewis. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, YouTube, and Google Podcasts. Your subscribing is huge. Your 5-star reviews and positive comments, much appreciated and extremely helpful. We're going to tease you a little bit, prime the pump, part of the trailer for My Culture and Mario Bobino. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
And they kind of say everything that's on their mind without a filter.
Are you a racist? Because that's what I'm getting right now.
No, I'm tired of seeing attractive black men dating outside their race.
Latino, Asians, white kids, you know what I'm saying? Well, I say white kids.